Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Infection Prevention Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance from an operator, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference call, Ms. Terry Straub. Ms. Straub, you may begin.
Hi, and thank you. Thank you for everyone joining the call today. As always, we have a lot to cover, but before we get started, I'd like each person in the subconference room to introduce yourself so that everyone knows you're on the line. Dr. Cole?
Brian Cole, Beth Israel.
Rachel Strickoff, New York State Department of Health.
Andrea Hoberman, United Hospital Fund.
Sean Cavanaugh, United Hospital Fund.
Rafael Ruiz, Greater New York.
Greater New York.
So thank you for everyone engaging in the subconference room. We're still waiting for our speakers to join us in the subconference room, but they will be dialing in a few moments. Before we get started, we just wanted to, as always, go through a few housekeeping issues related to the collaborative. Number one, housekeeping issue, I want to congratulate the State Department of Health on the successful release of their report card yesterday. And for those hospitals that were in the CLABS collaborative, the state ran an analysis of the hospitals in the collaborative versus those not in the collaborative, and there was for sure a statistically significant difference between performance with those in the collaborative having much lower rates. So I applaud everyone who participated in the CLABS collaborative, congratulate you, but also caution you to say moving forward in January, the data will be reported by individual hospitals, so the work needs to continue probably with even more vigilance than in the past since your individual hospital data will be reported on. Also, the media has, of course, as always, taken a little spin with the data in that it's sure hospitals are doing some good things, but a lot more has to be done, and Betsy McCoy really slammed the hospitals in some of the articles in that she said we need to get to zero. So she will be continuing to watch these activities and the reporting and the success of these collaboratives, and she does have very good success of getting quoted in the media. Rachel, do you have anything to add in regard to the public reporting? Or Brian? Hello? Rachel or Brian?
I was on mute, sorry.
How can we mute you, Rachel?
That's so easy. No, I muted me. No, I just wanted to say that I thought that the press conference went very well. Terry and Brian, of course, were very supportive, and that really helped. But we have no influence over what the media picks up. And actually, I do think that a lot of the media reports were good or okay. You know, they really were. It was just, you know, the few quotes from Betsy that sort of undermine the good work that all of us, and all of you in the hospitals, et cetera, have been doing.
Thank you. And Brian, do you have any comments in regard to moving forward and vigilance with the CLABS before we move into the CDAD? I guess he's muted as well. All right, so we'll get back to Brian. So moving forward then on the CDAD, the May 2008 data and team reports were due on June 30th. There are still many of them outstanding. If you have not submitted that data or the team reports, please do so as soon as possible to Gina. Secondly, everyone should have at some point received a copy of the IRB approval that we had received. And if you do not have it and you want it for your records, we are happy to send out a copy of it. Again, contact Gina, and she will send you a copy of the IRB exemption because this initiative is a quality improvement initiative, and it is exempt from the IRB approval process. We will, moving forward, ask hospitals just as a matter of due diligence and to have peer-protected privileges of your data, be putting together a data use agreement that Gina will be sending out to you. So we have it for the records. We ask that you put it through your proper chain within your hospital, your legal department, just to make sure that they sign it and that we keep this record for this collaborative and future activities. And
sorry,
also,
I'm back. Sorry.
If you are doing any hand hygiene observation, for this collaborative, and in the future, if we have an opportunity to work with your hospital to do hand hygiene observation, that data that we would collect or you would collect is also covered through the exempt DOH IRB process. So if anybody has any questions on that, feel free to speak up. And we are just doing this, just to make sure everyone is covered, that your data is protected under the Quality Improvement Act of New York State, and more importantly, to avoid in the future, if we decide to publish this data, on the successes that we know we all will have in this collaborative, that we will not get any negative feedback from anyone at CMS or in the government, HHS, telling us we did not go through the proper channels and that they call this research when, in fact, it is quality improvement, and we did get the exemption. As you recall, Johns Hopkins did have an issue, and the Michigan Hospital Association did have an issue when they had the New England Journal article published on the success of their CLABS collaborative. And finally, we are working on an article on the CLABS to publish in the Joint Commission Quality Journal. So hopefully we will have that completed and highlight the success of the initiative with everyone. Our first round of data collection for the CDIF has gone very, very well. Next week, Gina will be sending everyone an updated data collection form. It's very similar to what you're doing, so don't panic that there are major changes. But just to keep the data peer protected, we did do a little background programming so that we do not receive on our end the dates of admission and discharge, since that is considered part of HIPAA regs, and we want to keep that protected. Any comments from any of the speakers on the line?
Terry?
Yes.
Because I was disconnected. I don't know if you mentioned, though, about yesterday that Dr. Danes also noted the successes.
No, I didn't. Please speak up, Brian, and talk a little bit about that.
Yesterday at the press conference, Dr. Danes really spoke up about the successes that we had with the CLABS initiative. And that was actually very nice to sort of hear our successes with that. And it was also brought up by Dr. Danes, where he said that we are continuing on collaborative efforts. And he also noted that we already started work on C. difficile. So he's already helping set the stage for all of this.
Yes, he was very, very complimentary of the last collaborative. And for those that don't know, he was actually part of the advisory group and panel and hospital CEO signing off for his hospital at the time, St. Luke's Roosevelt, to join the collaborative. So he is very aware and educated about the collaborative process and about all of the data. So we applaud his initial report and, more importantly, his attention that he paid to the success of the collaborative. So congratulations to everyone on the line. So moving forward, we're still waiting for the folks from Mount Sinai to get on to the call, but we do want to continue moving forward. So next on the list is the contact precaution signs. So Gina did send everyone a copy of signage, and we just wanted to get some feedback from everyone as to what you thought of the signage. On the last call, we had some very good feedback on the red, green, blue signage. And then we put into place added some of your comments onto that signage. And then most recently, we send out an additional sign. It starts with a nurse's cap. It says stop, read, and protect. So if you could all look at that signage, it would be helpful.
Terry, I have one comment on that. I think the read diverts attention from what we really want to target.
Okay.
You know, in other words, if you're going to really have a big word in bold, it really shouldn't be read. You know, it should be something that you do.
Right.
So I just, you know, I've shared it with a couple of people, and they felt the same way. What am I read? You know?
Yeah. I think so far, you know, the first one, the stop one, is very good.
Yeah.
And we'll be drafting up one more because I had a personal one that I want to see designed. I wanted one possibly with either a door or a window in the background so we can distinguish between beds where possible. Any thoughts on that?
I'm not sure what you mean.
So when you go into a double bedded room, this, you know, if there were more than two patients in the room, we could have a version of the poster that gets posted outside with the door somewhere in the poster or as a background or as a window. Because most folks, you can have the sign on the door, and if the patients, one has C. diff, one does not, we don't know which patient does or doesn't without putting another sign over the patient.
Oh, got it.
So it's kind of just a subtle way without identifying the patient and having to hang more signs in the room.
Makes sense.
So we could come up with a couple of versions of that. So, operator, could you just open up the lines for questions or comments on the posters or questions and comments on release of the CLABS data, future public reporting, and this CDAD data collection and reporting?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Once again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key. One moment.
Harry, this is Andrea. I disconnected accidentally. I don't know if somebody already mentioned this, and maybe it was just our printer. On the stop, read, and protect sign, is that the color of the wording behind, is that supposed to be, we can't really read it in the way it was printed on ours. I don't know if that's the way it's supposed to be.
It's light, but we can talk about that, the coloring, because I think we'll be redoing that whole poster.
Our first question comes from the line of Lavonia Francis. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm Lavonia Francis from Mount Sinai.
Hi, Lavonia.
Hi, I'm representing Nursing Quality. Unfortunately, I didn't get a copy of the sign. I think I got laid onto email trail because I'm covering in the absence of the Nursing Quality Director, so I apologize for that.
No problem. We can get that if you can send Gina Shin your email address.
Okay, we'll do.
Any other comment, Lavonia?
No, not so far.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from the line of Kathy Shannon. Your line is open.
Hi, Kathy.
How are you?
Good.
I made a comment to Jean about the signs that our visitors, we don't require our visitors to wear gowns and gloves. We require them to perform hand hygiene before going into the room and before leaving the room, but not gowns and gloves. Can you make a comment about that?
Yeah, that's a good point, and maybe we need to distinguish that on the signage and try to tailor it so it's just a little more generic.
Yes, that'd be better.
I guess the signs maybe shouldn't be. Gina had added visitors check in with the nurse's station before entering, but then we got comments back that not everyone wants the visitors always going to the nursing station. I don't know if that's right or wrong. And then the sign was really put up there for the staff to know how to clean and manage the patients.
I was going to say, we don't usually have our visitors cleaning with bleach either.
Right, exactly.
You know, so I thought that the only thing that really applied to visitors was to go to the nurse's station.
I don't really know another way around it. Do you think that covers it if they say visitors go to the nurse's station, Kathy?
No, well, I don't really even like the idea of them going to the nurse's station. With our sign, we tell them that the commode in the bathroom needs to be cleaned with bleach. So if the visitor happens to be taking the patient to the bathroom, we have the bleach canister of bleach wipes in the bathroom that they can clean that area too. So it's not as if it's just the staff that are using the bleach. I think the visitors are too, I would hope.
Yeah, it gets complex. Brian, do you have any solutions?
Well, I know we don't have our visitors cleaning the toilet bowls with bleach, with the commodes, or whatever. I think, you know, we're going to have to just make it generic and, you know, have the ability to adapt it so that it meets each of our institution's needs. We actually have our visitors wear gowns and gloves when they're visiting somebody who's on precautions.
Any other comments from others on the line as to what you do? I mean, we can tailor, maybe make two different signs or try to figure out. The real purpose of the signage was really for the healthcare workers that they're all alerted to these patients going in and out of the room. What would be, Kathy, what would you, why would you be opposed to the visitors checking in with the nursing
I guess I'm really not opposed. I guess certain nurses would probably say, well, it's a HIPAA violation, I can't tell you what's going on, that kind of thing, but it might be more effective with the sign that we have outside to say, use bleach to clean the bathroom, use soap and water, you know, so that they just know. It's just an education that probably should happen.
Text the visitors by fostering communication between them and the nurses, just saying, you know, if you go into the patient, maybe you shouldn't touch anything. So whether or not they wear gloves and gowns, that's a hospital protocol.
Well, you know, we're trying to teach the visitors and the staff about drug-resistant organisms and things like that. And we've finally been able to say to them, you know, your patient has MRSA today and is going home tomorrow, and they're going to be sitting on the couch next to his husband or wife. And, you know, what are you going to do at home tomorrow? Are you going to take the yellow gown home with you tomorrow? And all of a sudden tomorrow, poof, you don't have to wear the gowns and gloves. So we're trying to teach them that hand hygiene, appropriate hand hygiene, either with soap and water or Purell, whichever it's supposed to be, and then environmental decontamination. I think that's the biggest piece. We have them watch a video. We have a certain video that's drug-resistant organisms, what visitors and patients need to be aware of when they go home. And I think that helps a lot more with the education of the patient. I'm a little confused here.
I mean, I'm looking at the CDC guidelines right now, and, you know, they're really sort of, they're waffling, because what they say is the use of PPE by visitors in healthcare settings has not been addressed specifically in the scientific literature. Some studies included the use of gowns and gloves by visitors in the control of drug-resistant organisms, but did not perform a separate analysis to determine whether their use by visitors had a measurable impact. You know, they do say that family members or visitors who are providing care or having very close patient contact, such as feeding, holding, et cetera, could contribute to transmission if barrier precautions are not used correctly. And then it just sort of ends with specific recommendations may vary by facility and should be determined by the level of interaction. So that's why I think a generic sign that maybe we can, you know, modify a little bit would be good.
I just have to go back to we don't want to fear, and that's my concern, that they're going to say to us, well, my mother had diarrhea for the past 3 days at home, so now everybody in my family is going to get sick with this. And what we try to do is teach them that they won't get sick if you've cleaned the home, if you've cleaned the bathroom, if you've cleaned the toilet seat, if you've cleaned the handles of the sink and the refrigerator knobs and the light, you know, the light switches, everything else.
But I think that's what's nice about sending them to the nurse's station.
Gary?
The fear could be alleviated. Yes?
Hi, this is Liz Coughlin from Mount Sinai. I just want to let you know we've tried to get on. We've heard your whole conversation, but have not been able to be heard till this point.
Okay, great. I'm glad you're with us, Liz.
Okay, thank you.
We'll get with you in a moment when we're done with this fine discussion. So, any other comments on the line? Kathy, let's hear from other folks and see if we can come up with some resolution and then get this sign issue put to bed and get some of them made for all of you.
Our next question comes from Kathy Mullaney. Your line is open.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy Mullaney from Our Lady of Mercy. I think this sign is great, and I think we're all, you know, we all are doing our own thing and have different policies, and we just need to come up with a generic sign. But we have two comments. With the gowns and the gloves, we think that maybe there should be a gown there also, possibly. And with the bleach, the bottle of bleach, I always fear having a bottle of bleach around because people think more is better and people try to make their own little concoction. But I know putting like Clorox or another product on there would also be supporting a product, so I don't know what the solution is. But we would like it to be more clean with bleach products because we have wipes here and we have sprays. So that's just out for, you know, general discussion. But overall, we like the sign.
Okay. So as far as getting around the bleach solution, maybe we could put like a little as indicated or as directed?
Is there any way we could put, like, all the different products that we have up there, like Clorox, PDI?
Oh, no, no, no.
No, okay.
Sorry, Kathy.
No.
Because then we are advertising again.
Yeah, yeah. Or clean with bleach products. I would change it to products.
Okay.
And then if we could get a little gown in there.
We already have addressed that.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. Overall, we like it.
Terrific. Any other comments?
Our next question comes from Sharon Wilson. Your line's open.
Oh, my question, hello?
Yeah, Sharon.
Yeah, hi. Oh, my. I didn't see the sign, so my question wasn't related to the sign. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's in regards to the form that we're filling out on the section that requires whether or not the patient had a colectomy. Now, is the colectomy related to the C. diff, or if they've had a colectomy and now, you know, have C. diff, do we still check colectomy?
It's related to the C. difficile.
Okay, so if they've had a colectomy before and now they have C. diff, we don't check, we check no?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
Okay, fabulous. So we'll move forward, and we'd like to thank our guest hospital today, guest speakers, Liz Coughlin and her team from Mount Sinai's Medical Center. Liz is the Assistant Director of Infection Control, and they're going to talk a little bit about their experience with the environmental service training and observations that they've had in regard to the training and collecting some of the data. So, Liz?
Yeah, I'd just like to introduce Luis Giussiano, who is the HR training and development person for us, and he's going to do the presentation.
Hello, how are you? How are we all doing?
They don't hear us?
Yeah.
No, they don't hear us. Do you hear us?
I hear you.
Okay.
Liz, it's very low, so whoever the speaker is really needs to be closer to the microphone.
Okay, can you hear us better now?
It's still a little low.
Okay. This is Mr. Giussiano.
HR and Human Development, Human Resources, excuse me, and Development and Training for the Aramark Company here at Mount Sinai Hospital.
We hear you.
Okay. How are we doing? Are we hearing me now?
Hear you now.
I'm practically on top of this machine now.
Okay, it's great.
What we were going to present today was what we're using as our building service cleaning module that we're moving forward training our EVS staff with, our environmental services staff with. We put a few slides together, about 40 slides that outline line by line in detail what their responsibility is in the rooms as they gown up into the room, get into the room and do what they need to do, and exit out of the room. So we had put together a few slides to show to my colleagues here to make sure that we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and officially be an effective tool for us to use. Can we hear me? I lost connection. Testing.
We can hear you.
Okay. So the only thing that's outstanding right now for us with building service is still, and we heard some discussion already with you guys about the cleaning agent, the 100% bleaching agent. We have our dispatch is our preferred product right now that we've been using. There has been some discussion with Mount Sinai and other vendors trying to introduce another agent or identical agent, but from a different vendor. But that hasn't developed or materialized much yet, as of yet. So we're moving forward with our dispatch. It's been working well for us, and it's been CDC approved. So we're gonna all of our orientation and training is gonna involve the dispatch as the germicidal or disinfectant agent. So if you can hear me, can you still hear me?
Yep.
Unfortunately, you can't see the slides, and that it's for the. Oh, great. Okay, good.
See the arrow?
There it is. I tried to not put my piece here. All right, so and it's designed and geared to remember the end users are my EVS staff, there are some language barriers and some reading and writing, you know, also there may be some barriers. So the text here is as simple as we could possibly make it, but most of the knowledge is going to come from and instructions coming from the person who's training them. So they'll be able to walk them through all of this and understand what the text is and why it's there. But we first slide is going to read the C. difficile affects patients, healthcare workers, and their families. Next slide gives them a pathophysiology, what is it? Right, of C. difficile. And it just introduces to them how one contracts C. difficile and how that, you know, the conditions in the environment create that so that a patient can be contaminated or contract C. difficile or develop C. difficile. So it was just a quick picture there of what that looked like. Again, it's just another slide. Moving forward, it goes that it's a bacterium transmitted by the fecal-oral route when shed in feces and released, and survives for long periods of time in the environment. Again, and when we talk to our staff about this, we emphasize that, you know, this has a long gestation period, and it will stay in the area way beyond the patient's discharge if the area is not cleaned thoroughly with the agents that we use to clean this area. We let them know, did you know that C. diff spores have a life expectancy of up to 70 days? And most of them are shocked to hear that even after the fact, the patient could be home and we could still be contaminating people is you know, a shocking factor to them, and it helps. Spores are resistant to disinfectants and standard cleaning solutions used by building service staff. Some of our chemicals that we use on a routine basis to clean our patient rooms, like our Sandy Masters 3 and 4s, are not effective here, and that it has to be a bleach-based product. It tells them also on the slide that the alcohol-based pump sanitizers do not kill the spore, and that C. diff is resistant to germicides. Spores are among those most resistant to being killed, and only the prions or prions are more resistant. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, the microbiology of it, but when you explain it to them, they understand and the need for the urgency of it. We then tell them on another slide what the recommended actions are: hand washing with soap and water, contact isolation procedures, which they have been practicing from day one, detailed cleaning to patients' contact surfaces. And we hone in on that part because we've learned now that it's more the agitation of the surface when you're wiping down the surface that you physically are being aggressive about moving your cloth or your rag across the surfaces to not promote, at least to agitate that area so that you don't promote, you know, a consistency and a sustainability for these bacteriums to grow into the spore stages and vegetation stages, and it makes it almost impossible then to wipe them out. So the idea of daily cleaning and on top of that room as often as you can to prevent and agitate the area as much as possible is what seems to be the recommended course that they want us to take. Detailed daily cleaning, if not more frequent, special terminal cleaning, which is what we're going through now, and no cross-contamination through our space care QO preferred. And what we mean by that is we have a program at Aramark that helps with a mop exchange program microfiber mops that we're going to be introducing into our contact isolation rooms, where one mop is used to sweep and clean the floor and wipe the floor down, and then that's taken away, and you'll never see that again in any of the other rooms. So it's a very swift, effective way of doing that job, and it cuts down on the time it takes us to clean that room and get that room turned over for our next patients, which is obviously very important for all of us. Then the slides go into pictures. We went into and we utilized one of our EVS staff members, and we photographed them from start to finish. And these are the start to finish line items of cleaning the rooms that are involved in the checkout list, the checklist of the cleaning of the terminal and terminal clean data cleaning. We went line by line on that, and we photographed the EVS staff performing that specific task. So it goes into like 40 slides of put on your PPE, remove the curtains, and replace the curtains after the room is cleaned. We do high dusting, which includes air vents, exhaust vents, top of the door frames, wall-mounted pictures, overhead lights, et cetera. And we have photos of them, you know, doing that and performing that task. TVs and the TV stands and whatever brace that holds the television. The mattresses, very important. We're wiping above and beneath the mattress. Very thorough about that. And each slide always constantly showing the dispatch agent as the preferred agent to doing the cleaning. The bed frames and the surfaces above and beneath the bed frames and all the cracks and crevices involved in that. the bed rails, we wipe it between the rails and the movable parts, detailed attention to the remote buttons and the controllers, because that's a lot of activities happening on those buttons while the patient is staying. We have pillows, and we place clean pillows on a clean surface, and if there's still some talk about bringing in a brand new pillow into the room, it's really a supply and demand issue there, but we're not going to, you know, we're working on those loose ends there in terms of pillows. But we have them cleaning it and making sure that they are clean and placed in a clean surface before they return it back into the room. We address the call buttons, the cables attached to the call buttons. Again, an emphasis on whenever that patient or their relative or clinical staff have engaged that room at any one shape or form, that is being addressed and agitated as much as possible. Wiping all horizontal surfaces, and we have photos of the patient's bedside table. We have pictures of the and photos of the window sills, you know, things like that where the patient would just congregate there, lean on it, sit by it. Anything that we assume that a patient is doing and that type of activity, we kept that in mind when we were creating this. Overbed tables and the drawers in the overbed tables, sometimes it's neglected, and we make sure that we make an emphasis on getting in the drawers. The telephones and the detail to the handset of the phone, the key buttons on the phone, and the cord as well. The furniture in the room, with attention to the armrests and the chairs, the seats in the backs of them, both for the patient chair and the visitor's chairs. And we have slides and photos of them wiping that down as well. The medical equipment, blood pressure cuffs, IV pumps, IV poles, EKG machines, anything that was utilized and nursing identified as what resided in the room with the patient should be and is being addressed with the terminal cleaning of that patient's room, and even the daily cleaning. If the room has a piece of equipment in there, we're going to make an attempt to wipe that down again to agitate the surface, to not promote and not allow this to grow into a spore state or vegetative state. The medical equipment on the wall gauges, you know, the monitors, patient monitors, the wall-mounted gas gauges, your suction canisters. Again, anything that our nursing staff or doctor or medical staff have utilized and engaged the patient with is being addressed and agitated. We're going to spot clean the walls, obviously, with attention around the light switches or anywhere that the patient will congregate and touch for prolonged periods. We're going to make sure that we address those issues as well. Door knobs, door surfaces. Again, these are slides after slide after slide showing an EVS member performing that task, the door knobs, the door surfaces, the bathroom door knobs, the bathroom surface doors, the mirrors, even the patient's mirrors. You know, no one wouldn't think, but yes, even the mirrors is addressed. The sink basins, the countertops, the sink faucets, all of those are addressed, and photos for all of them. The shower stall, that's right, stall, right? Sitting, right?
Yeah.
With detailed attention to the handrails and the faucets all around that bathroom, whether it be inside the shower room or around the toilet area. We also have photos of cleaning the toilet levers, the toilet bowls. There's another slide that shows them wiping the inside of the toilet bowl basin. And that's also, you know, used, and that's discarded when they leave that room. It's discarded.
The mop head
is discarded. Wipe surfaces off the hand sanitizers also, the soap dispensers and the paper towels, because, you know, the patient is using it, the visitors are using it, the nursing staff are using it, the physician staff are using those dispensers and touching them. So we make sure that we wipe those surfaces down as well. And in the end, when it's all clean and they go back into the room after they've cleaned the room, they then restock those areas. We dust mop the floors and we wet mop the floors all around, and as obviously is what we need to do. This is where I'm telling you about the microfiber mop heads. There's another space care program that Aramark has designed that allows us to be able to sweep and mop the floor with one mop head. And it's being used in Albany. It's being used in Delaware. It's very effective. It's cost-effective as well as time efficiency as well. That's the piece here that we're trying to capture here, because it takes us from start to finish at least 45 minutes to get that bed turned over for a terminal clean, if not a little longer. If we can reduce that time, all the better for, you know, for the hospital in terms of getting that bed available for another patient. We empty the trash, we discard the mop heads, the Johnny mops, the dust mop heads, and any rags that are used, and then we replace the trash liner. We remove the PPE before we exit the room. There's those slides there with little bugs in their hand, just to remind them on the next slide that after you remove it, you perform your hand hygiene. That's all it is. It always ends with hand hygiene. When we re-enter a clean room, we go in there with clean bed linen and wash towels. We go in there with clean supplies, paper towels, soap, and et cetera, with patient family education material that we often leave for our patients and relatives to read, and obviously the new curtains for a terminal clean. We re-enter the clean. It just shows more slides of them going back into the room. No gloves on now, no gowns, because that process has already been done. The room is clean, and we now can engage those dispensers and resupply those dispensers and redress the bed. And that's it. That's about 40, 44 slides that we use as our module, training module. We have all of our the 44 assistant managers and operations managers already trained using this process and the checklist, and we are now moving next week aggressively for the next couple of weeks, getting all the EVS staff in tune with this training. And that's it for now.
And thank you so much. That was great. Brian or Rachel, any comments on cleaning process?
I really liked the idea of having the pictures. I was a little bit wondering about dusting the ceilings and, you know, just as far as should we focus on those things that are the most important or not, but I guess I'd like the thoughts of others.
Yeah, when we approach that, for a terminal clean, obviously that's not a daily cleaning, or am I going to be agitating dust over the patient's head, but for the terminal cleaning, I would expect, and CDC also requests that we do the vent and clean that off as well. So that's part of the program because it's for us, that's an obvious. It's got to be cleaned as a terminal clean.
Great. Operator, maybe you can open up the line to any questions, comments, suggestions.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Once again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key. Our first question comes from Ernest Clement. Your line is open.
Hi. First, I wanted to say that I think this is a fantastic program, and I'm very glad to see that you're addressing the issues of language barriers with your environmental service staff and using pictures. I've used this in facilities that I've worked in before, and I actually gave them copies to keep on their carts so they can see visually what they should be doing, so that may be a suggestion for you. I had a couple of suggestions for maybe the order in which things were cleaned. Notably, in the pictures or in the slide set, you're moving from the bed back to the windowsills. And I was always a proponent of moving from a cleaner area to a more soiled area. So you would expect that the bed would be more contaminated than, say, windowsills. So that, and also moving from doing the toilet basin and then moving to the towel and soap dispenser. So I would think about maybe reversing those steps. I'm sorry?
I completely agree with you.
Okay.
There is going to be, we're going to be tweaking this and making sure that it flows, like you say.
Great.
From least clean to the most dirtiest.
Okay. A couple other things.
Though, it was just showing you the pictures of how we're moving forward with this.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's a great idea. I think pictures, like they say, tell 1,000 words. The other thing is, in the picture of the towel and soap dispenser, it looks like they're actually changing the equipment rather than cleaning the devices, and I'm wondering if that's going to be confused as now is the time when I change, when actually I think you're trying to depict cleaning at that point.
There are two sets of pictures, yes. When they have their gloves on, they're cleaning. The second set of pictures, touching based on those dispensers, their hands are free of gloves. But I appreciate you saying that because it could lend itself to being confused. And if we may even consider modifying that picture system.
Right.
If you picked it up from over there,
yeah. They're
surely they're probably going to pick it up as well. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. The other comment I wanted to make, just in general, I think if you look, and again, you're using this as an example of best practice. So if you look at many of the pictures, the person who's doing the cleaning, their gloves are not fitting correctly. So there's big gaps between the glove and the gown. And I don't know if you're going to want to go and retake all these pictures, but you may want to point out to the people when you're doing the training that you may want to point to that gap and say, don't let this happen, as opposed to maybe having to take new pictures. On page 13, in the empty trash slide, the PPE is actually falling off the person. The gown is hanging off. You can see bare skin on the arms. And I think that's just something you may want to point out and say, make sure that you tie your gown good and that your gloves fit correctly.
No, you're absolutely right. We'll just redo those pictures.
Okay.
Thanks, Ernie.
Okay. And then, I don't know, do you commonly refer to the hand sanitizer as a pump sanitizer? Because I know a lot of people refer to them as hand sanitizer. So at first when I read that, I thought maybe you had a dispenser of a cleaning agent of some kind that you were pumping. But you're referring to the wall-mounted hand sanitizer?
Correct.
Okay. I wasn't sure. If that's the way you refer to it in your facility, then great, leave it. But otherwise, you may want to consider calling that the hand sanitizer.
And that's the value of this collaborative. Everybody can learn from each other on the call, but each hospital adopts their own process and their own language.
Exactly. So that's all I had, but again, I just want to compliment you. This is a great learning tool, and I think I hope that everybody tries to pick up the ball and run with this one.
I appreciate your kind comments and excellent suggestions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How long does it take you, this is Terry from Greater New York, to do this whole cleaning process?
Start to finish, we're averaging a time of about 45 to 50 minutes.
And one person?
One person.
So one person, 45 to 50 minutes. So could you just walk through the background from the point the patient is discharged, what the process is and notification?
Once the patient is, and we're made aware electronically, our system, we have electronic system. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
We have an electronic HRS system, they call, acronym, I'm sure. Our ISIS system that, by the nurse and the BA notifying the system, so they get into the computer and they tag in that a room in any given building is available and because of a discharge. Once that triggers, it hits us on our home base down in the building service department where we're tracking this on large screen TVs, what rooms throughout the hospital are available for discharge, and then we radio, walkie-talkie, and page our staff to respond to those discharges.
And then how are the staff notified some way that this room, I know you do a terminal cleaning for all the rooms, but are they notified that this patient had C. diff? Like, is there a specific notification to flag these rooms for these discharges?
Yeah. Our infection control department does a great job of tracking our C. diff cases. So we know in advance, the day before, we get a list generated from our infection control folks of the patients or the new cases that are presenting throughout the hospital. So we know sort of in advance on paper because IC has identified that for us. But even up on the floors, the BA's responsibility, the business associate's responsibility, and the nursing staff is to notify that when building service presents that room was slated as an isolation room, contact isolation room. There'll be signs all over the place, but we do have a preemptive strike. Our infection control people put together a good spreadsheet of where those cases are throughout the hospital.
Thank you. So, operator, maybe continue on with the questions.
Our next question comes from Kathy Maloney. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Kathy again from Our Lady of Mercy. Thanks for sharing these slides. They're really great slides. We were just wondering how do you teach all of this? Is it one-on-one, or is it five people at the same time, and do you competency check them on all of this work?
It's twofold. We put them in a classroom where we can gab as many as we can to at least give them the preempt of what's coming down the pike in terms of this new training. And then as they're working on their units, their supervisors and the managers, one by one, are walking them through that whole process. And then we, you know, keep the competency by daily monitoring our isolation rooms. So there's the checklist that we go by, but we do it twofold. We put them in a classroom setting first to grab as many people as we can. Mm-hmm. We have over 600 employees here. And then as they start to get assigned up to the rooms, in the buildings, they are then addressed individually by their supervisors and managers on how to deal with terminal cleaning and daily cleaning of C. diff cases.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Deborah DiDomenico. Your line is open.
Hi, Debbie from Long Beach. We just had two questions. One was just a clarification regarding the terminal clean. We use the microfiber, but I believe you mentioned that you throw out the mops, or do you wash them after the terminal clean?
We have them bagged, separate from the other mop heads, and they're washed.
Okay. The other thing, my housekeeping person who's here brought up a good point. What about the toilet paper that's not completely used? Do you change the toilet paper and the paper towels?
Gee, nice. Didn't think of that one. That one slipped through the cracks. We'll definitely look into that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michael Perry. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Mike Parry at Stanford. We like the slides a whole lot. Just have one question. Whether you address the issue of how long the surfaces stay wet with the bleach, I noticed that wasn't really included in the slides, but we think that that's kind of important to do.
2-minute contact period, but yeah, it's not outlined in the slide, but it is part of how we discuss it and review it with our staff.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. How long do you say?
2 minutes.
Our next question comes from John Joyce. Your line is open.
Hi, this is John Joyce from Stanford, and Dr. Parry just actually took my question, so I'm okay now.
Thank you.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our next question comes from Kathy Shannon. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm going to introduce Anthony Daniello. He's my Director of Environmental Services.
This piggybacks on the contact time question. Here at St. Catharines, we wash the beds first, and we do the mattresses on both sides. And because of the contact time, we lean the mattress up against the bed rails, do the rest of the room so it will dry. Because we found that if you didn't do that, it stays wet between the pan that the mattress lays on and the mattress itself, and it's causing us corrosion to the bedpan. Is anyone else finding that problem?
Great comment. And you're right. The corrosion becomes an issue for the equipment. We've been fortunate to have Hillron beds, and it's been helping us out with that corrosion issue because the base of those beds, subject themselves to corrosion. But for the older beds, the older models, we prop them up just like you do to make sure that we dry off that surface before we lay it back down. So before, obviously, the bed is dressed with new clean linen, the mattress is then laid down. By then, you know, it's been 35, 40 minutes that the EVS staff member has been cleaning the room out. It should have dried by then.
Yeah, so you do have. There is a good reason to clean the bed first, then. So you do have as much contact time, and it does dry.
It does. Yes, we keep that in consideration. Yes.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carolyn Barker. Your line is open.
Well, I just wanted to know. They had said something about the toilet tissue. I didn't hear the answer. What was the answer to the toilet tissue? Do you remove it or not?
We should be doing so, yes.
Okay, because I know here at the university we do remove ours. We know the C. diff patient or whatever, and we do terminal cleans in one unit where they majority go. We do a terminal clean every time it's discharged. Or if we have a patient that's been in this certain unit for 7 days, that patient is moved to another location, we keep an empty room so we can terminally clean that room, which has helped us a lot here. But I just wanted to say we do remove the toilet tissue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Inez Arnett. Sir, your line is open.
Hi, I'm calling from New York Hospital, Queens, and I have a question regarding the germicidal that you use, Dispatch. Number one, what is the vendor for that product, and how successful has it been in your infection control rate?
Good question about the vendor. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but I can get that information over to you guys. But Dispatch is what we've been using for
years,
and it is CDC approved, and we've never had any issues with that, and it is the preferred agent here, at least at Mount Sinai, and in some other institutions as well. Until told otherwise, that's what we're going to be using. In terms of the vendor, I don't know off the top of my head who is the vendor, but I can get that information over to you.
And I also have a question regarding your microfiber mop. You say that you sweep and mop with that tool.
That is correct. So instead of having a set of dust mopping the floor first and then mopping it with the wet mop, this does both simultaneously. It'll gather the dust and the dirt off the floor while it applies whatever agent or sanitizer onto the floor and cleans the floor. It's a great system.
Is that an automated system?
Negative. It's on a mop handle, and the EVS or building service personnel wipes the floor down as if they were sweeping or mopping a floor. And then,
there is a stroking mechanism, you know, how you do S shapes and all that. But, yeah, it is preferred because it kills two birds with one stone and it turns over the room much quicker.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Kathy Shannon. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Anthony again.
I have a question about the dispatch. Is dispatch the general cleaning agent that you use throughout the hospital, or is there another product that you use with it? And is that used all over or just in your isolation rooms?
In this case, specifically in our isolation rooms and in the other of the isolation rooms. But our general cleaner is the Sandy Master and the all-purpose, both from Enviros is the vendor.
Thank you.
Both are the quaternarium ammonients.
Our next question comes from Michelle Gillis-Harry. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Denise Serber. I'm calling from Trinitas Hospital. I'm calling in regard to your use of dispatch. In Trinitas Hospital, our housekeepers here pour the dispatch a little in a bucket, and they wet their rag. This way they're concentrating all the liquid on the rag instead of using a spray bottle and spraying. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Faith Skeet. Your line is open.
It's actually Steve Bach from in Faith's Place from NYU Medical Center in New York City calling. I have a quick question about this great packet that you guys put together at Mount Sinai. I know some of the people up in Mount Sinai. You guys have a great packet, and it's wonderful to see the pictures. This doesn't just talk 1,000 words, it sings. I have a quick question. On page 2, it mentions that, did you know that C. diff, the teaching content, it says, did you know that C. diff spores are transmitted by the fecal-oral route when shed in feces and released in the air? Can you comment on the airborne C. diff? I'm not sure I understand that. And the other question has to do with, in the pictures, it shows the staff member wearing a mask, and usually masks are not used with contact precautions for patients who have C. diff. Thanks.
I should have no further questions at this time.
Got me on that one. Right, for the...
Maybe I could just comment. Some of the hospitals have suggested that they use a mask when they're cleaning because of the bleach products and the odor.
That's correct. We were just, you know, we were just commenting on that. The point of the mask is to mask from the VOCs. No.
We do have a question from Deborah DiDomenico. Your line is open.
Yes, Deborah.
Hi. Just a clarification. When you mop the floor, what solution are you using with the microfiber? The dispatch or a different solution?
We're using the Sandy Master 3.
And what is that, a quad?
Good morning, right? Yeah, yes, it is.
Okay. To the best of my knowledge, then, nobody in this collaborative is using bleach on the floors, right?
That's to my knowledge. I agree.
Okay. Thank you.
Is anyone on the call using bleach on the floor?
Our next question or comment comes from Denise Nabel. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. We are using bleach on our floors, the dispatch, mm-hmm. and we're not having a problem with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Michelle Gillis-Harry. Your line is open.
Yes, Michelle.
Hi, my name is Denise. Can you hear me?
Yes, Denise.
Hi, listen, I have a question in regard to your dispatch. We use dispatch, we pour it into a container, and then we wet a rag to clean the walls and to clean any kind of surfaces, the bed and stuff. Otherwise, if you're using it, your pictures are showing that you're spraying it, which is just spraying on the surface. It's not doing a full area. It's just doing a small area that it's concentrating on. Does anybody have any questions on that or any comments? No.
Our next question comes from John Joyce. Your line is open.
Hi. I don't know if it's a question or a comment, and I don't know what kind of dispatch you're using. We use dispatch here, and it's ready to use. My question or comment is, if you're putting the dispatch into water, aren't you diluting the product?
Our dispatch here at Mount Sinai is ready to use. We don't dilute it.
Right. I mean, it seems if you're putting the ready-to-use into water, you're diluting the product, and thus it's not as effective.
Our next question or comment comes from Ernest Clement. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Ernie. I think the question about whether you should be spraying the dispatch on or soaking a rag and using it that way, almost as important as what you're using is the physical scrubbing. So if you're using a spray and you're scrubbing the area, and you know and the liquid is on there, I think that's just as important. So you really have to follow the manufacturer's directions on the bottle itself. So I'm not sure, and I haven't used Dispatch in a long time, so I don't know what the label says, but I think both of the organizations that talked about how they're using it look at the bottle and see what it says about how to use it. And that would be my only comment on trying to settle that debate.
Thank you, Ernie.
Our next question or comment comes from Michelle Gillis-Harry. Your line is open.
Michelle?
Your line is open.
I think we were just trying to get back to that original question, and we're not diluting the dispatch. It's being used full strength, and I do agree that the amount of rubbing done is the thing that's going to make the difference. It doesn't sound like either method makes the difference. And I think Denise also had a comment about when to take the curtains down, and she felt that it might be best to do that on the first, before you start the cleaning, because this, you're taking down the curtain, you're putting it, we take it down here, we take it down, we put it in a plastic bag and tie it up. After the room is totally cleaned, then we add a fresh curtain. What I thought I understood before was that you put a new curtain up, you change your curtains at the end of your cleaning. I don't know, was that right, is what I heard?
It's as you described. It comes down in the beginning of the process, and at the end of the process, a new curtain goes up.
The second slide on page 4.
If you look at the second slide on page 4, it outlines that. So, yeah, we do take it down first, and then when the process is complete, we then come in with the clean curtain at the end.
And next question or comment comes from Deborah DiDomenico. Your line is open.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about terminal cleaning. I'm just curious how much time it takes to daily clean one of the C. diff rooms, and also as far as the dilution of bleach. We clarified at last C. diff that when patients are in the room, we would use a 1 to 100 solution as compared to a 1 to 110 for terminal.
1 to 10.
1 to 10 for terminal.
Well, the daily cleaning, it'll take about maybe 10 minutes to get in there and agitate the surface area while the patient's in there. We don't spend too much time in there, but we do hit the hot spots, the light switches, the handrails, the cables, the medical equipment, and the restrooms while the patient stays there. So it takes an average about 15 minutes at max to get in and out of a room daily. But we still use the dispatch at the concentration that we use dispatch always. We don't dilute it or make it any less.
And there hasn't been any patient complaints about employees about the odor or what?
So far, to this day, none.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. I'm showing no further questions at this time.
We want to applaud our colleagues from Mount Sinai Hospital on a wonderful presentation.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I appreciate all your comments as well. We'll definitely go back and adjust and tweak wherever we can.
Yeah, I think all the feedback is great because as they were giving you feedback, I'm sure folks were writing down notes, thinking about their own system and their own process as far as how they can change. And the photos within the presentation and your teaching method is certainly exemplary of how to deal with these language barriers and education levels of the staff. So thank you for doing that. And if others have similar training programs or training programs that they would like to highlight in the future, we would love to get the feedback since the training of the environmental staff is such a critical component of this entire collaborative, which is what's so great about this collaborative. We're bringing and engaging all different levels of staff in making patient safety and improving patient outcomes a priority, having them see the value of their role in quality and patient safety. So this effort is a great one. And I have no other comments on the presentation. Gina, do you have anything to add for... Okay, so as moving forward, we still have to plan our long-term care program for some time in the fall. We haven't received a lot of feedback as far as what should be in that program. Gina will be sending out an inquiry again to everyone after today's call if you have any particular topic areas. But we will have that kickoff meeting here at Greater New York. What we really do need from you, and Gina will ask for it in the email as well, is what long-term care facilities you are continuing to partner with or have recently engaged as a partner, or you would like us to engage on your behalf as a partner to invite to the collaborative kickoff meeting. We will also ask for that particular meeting for an individual from your team or members of your team to join your collaborative long-term care facility at the training session. This session should be about 4 or 5 hours. It will not be a full day. We anticipate it will start in the morning, end around 1 o'clock with the box lunch to go. So any feedback, thoughts for the training would be appreciated. I would imagine a huge focus of the training will be on environmental services and the challenges of cleaning an environment in which the patients are really not patients, they're actual residents, and they're using regular chairs, their rooms may be carpeted, and they have their own personal effects in the room. So there are those cleaning challenges that we need to address in the long-term care environment. And the other challenge is, what type of communication structure do we need to put in place for the continuity of care as the patient transitions from the long-term care environment to the hospital or from the hospital back to the long-term care environment, so that we make sure each area is cleaned thoroughly before the patient's reintroduced into their long-term care bed. Rachel, Dr. Cole, Andrea, any comments?
Nothing from me, just great job.
Okay, so we'll be in touch in regard to the long-term care program, and our next conference call is on Wednesday, August 6th. If you have particular topics or you would like to present on the conference call, please let myself or Gina know, and we would love to hear your experience and where you are with progress in relationship to the CDAT collaborative. If you have any challenges, obstacles, barriers that you need us to address, please feel free to email those challenges to us or barriers, and we'll try to seek comments on your behalf. If you want to remain confidential, we're happy to do so as well. If you're having challenges, I know some folks are having some challenges in relationship to the use of the bleach products, so we'll continue to address those challenges and work with you as you move forward. So that's it on behalf of those folks in the subconference room here and the collaborative as a whole, Greater New York and UHF. We want to thank you all for being on today's call, and we will be in touch with you shortly.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's program. Thank you for your participation. You may now all disconnect. Have a great day.